call by phone, toll free in the United States and Canada at 888-863-2722. If you have internet access, point your browser to www.feettofire.com. That's www.feet2fire.com. And check the left of the screen for the How to Participate text and click. You can then choose direct chat with James or join the official group chat room. You can send email to James at f2f@innersights.com. And now, live from Chicago, here is the Black Knight of Talk Radio, James Arthur Yancic. Always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. You better stop now. What's that sound?
Our next guest, John J.R. Moore, is radio host, survivalist, author, researcher, and, a career military man. He first was in the military in 1967, walking patrols of Vietnam and so forth. He flew 57 combat missions over Vietnam, Cambodia. He went on to join the Green Beret at Fort Bragg, where he trained to invade the Middle East. Special operations, covert operations, psychological operations, undercover operations, surveillance operations, bodyguard, an executive for executive and stars like Jane Fonda and Charlton Heston, private investigator, firearms instructor, intelligence analyst, homicide detective. These are just some of the jobs that have kept him busy over the years. Today, John uses his expertise to help others be safe from terrorism. The author of a book on personal security, the producer of a seminar on a video about being safe from terrorism. John appears on talk show shows around the country with his book and video. You can have John Moore as your personal bodyguard instructor. The website is thelibertyman.com. And welcome to the show, John.
James, thank you very much.
And you have one or, I guess, two radio shows now. Two as well, right?
Well, actually, three. I'm co-hosting a show on Genesis every Friday from 4 to 5 with Dr. Bill Deagle. So I do a lot of radio. I do way too much radio. your bumper music, it brought to mind something. I think about this occasionally. There was probably maybe 100 or so what might be called protest songs, motivational songs from the 60s. That have virtually disappeared from the playlist of all the oldie radio shows. It's like they never existed. The show, the stations that play the old rock and roll music.
Yeah.
Music like your bumper music, which there was probably 50 to 100 similar songs. It's like they never existed, James.
Yeah, you know, I had a year or so ago, I had John Kay on from Steppenwolf. We talked about the 60s, 70s versus now. And the compare and contrast, and it seems like the songs like that and the thoughts that went on back then, they would like to keep them buried or cover them up by, well, it was drugs back then and blah, blah, blah. But no, it was also free thought and free criticism.
Right.
And good
it
vision.
It was encouraged. Yeah, it was encouraged. We were not very politically correct back in the 60s. I lived through it, and we were not politically correct at all. There's a direction I'd like to go I think would work, fit right in, and you might find fascinating regarding Earth changes and so forth, and what we're looking at, the deception of global warming. It has to do with the cyclical nature of this, and something called the Black Knight.
Hmm.
Are you aware that there's an object in space called the Black Knight?
No, I am not.
Well, you're about to be. And here's the deal. It has two nicknames, but the Sputnik went up in 1959 about the size of a grapefruit. Our satellite, first satellite, went up the size of a basketball a few months later. Optical and radar tracking stations were set up all over the planet to track these manned objects in space. And they found, James, there was already an object up there on a polar orbit. By the way, we've only been able to do polar orbits for about 20 or 25 years. And one of the two nicknames of this object in space, a satellite, is the Black Knight.
Now, is this object something that the Russians put up, or someone else, or from an extraterrestrial origin?
Well, that has to do with the cyclical nature of this. You know, you hear a lot about the Mayan calendar, for example. Do you know the Mayans were doing mathematical calculations to 10 decimal points? Do you know that, we've been aware of Pluto for about 100 years. Babylonian clay tablets, which are about 1,500 years older than Jesus Christ, talk about and make reference to Pluto, which we've only known about for 100 years. The Black Knight is estimated to be 12,000 years old and is 20,000 miles high. James, if you were to go to Pakistan tomorrow morning at that disputed area between Pakistan and India with the right detection equipment, you could find radiation from a nuclear device that went off many, many thousands of years ago. That's the point to everything we're about to discuss.
And I wonder if that Black Knight may be referenced to what some astrologers say called Lilith, which is a dark moon, a very small dark moon that...
No. This is 40 by 70 feet on a polar orbit. I don't know the third dimension. I do know its other nickname, which is the chirogenic box. Every U.S. senator knows about it. I know that for a fact. It's well known in NASA. It's well known in certain circles within the military. Once you're at a flag rank officer, for example, there's two books I found to make reference to it. I first ran across it in a book written by an archaeologist named Jonathan Gray. The title of the book is Dead Men's Secrets.
Oh yeah.
In the first page of the book, have you talked to Jonathan Gray?
Yeah, we've had him on a couple times.
Well,
not on this particular subject.
Mention the Black Knight to him, and he'll talk your arm off. It's fascinating. And, the topic tonight, James, is the deception of global warming, the fact that the federal government is engaged in a cover-up to conceal what's really going on. They've been doing this now since 1979. They knew 30 years in the future, which, of course, is right now, that very bizarre things would be happening with our weather. They decided the cover story would be CO2 man-made greenhouse gases creating these weather events, which, of course, is a cover-up and deception to keep people confused, obfuscated, in the dark about what's really happening. What's really happening is there is climate change, and as a homicide detective, I have two skills, basically, finding witnesses and taking statements. I have two homicides in my caseload right now. One's dormant, the other one we're working on an appeal. But I found the witnesses, James, and I took their statements. The witnesses are veterans of the U.S. Navy Submarine Corps. Their statements have to do with classified briefings they started attending beginning in 1979. What you have access to, James, and what your listeners have access to is what we call open source material from magazines, books, newspapers, TV, and so forth, open source, unclassified material, which is basically mostly deception. At the classified briefings, these Navy veterans, of course they were active duty at the time, were told that during their lifetimes, not their children's, not their grandchildren's, during their lifetimes, these oceans would come out of their basins and flood all coastal areas to 400 feet above sea level. And that the place they needed to be for the retirement homes was the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks. And that's what they've done. Without exception, every Navy veteran who's been to these briefings and is aware of the map. Now, you got my DVD, correct, James?
Yeah, I went through it, took some notes.
Okay, good. Well, that map is a recreation of the Navy's classified map showing where the flooding will occur on the East Coast, West Coast, Gulf Coast, and, of course, the Mississippi Valley going all the way up to Chicago takes a really big hit, with basically cutting the country in two at the Mississippi River. The Great Lakes become one Great Lake, stretching all the way to Hudson Bay, becoming a new inland sea. So that's what we're looking at, and what's most important, of course, is the timeline. It's always on people's minds.
Well, how do they know this is going to happen? I mean,
they know. Well, here's how they know. Astronomers have known for about 150 years that something was affecting our planets, causing them to what they call perturb and have movements they couldn't account for except by another very large body, heavenly body, shall we say. So astronomy is basically mathematics, James. I mean, right. They use all these instruments, but it comes down to mathematics. And they calculate it. Based on their calculations, by the 1970s, they had a pretty good idea where this object should be, and the Pioneer 10 space probe was sent looking for it, and they found it, and they confirmed it. By 1979, they knew exactly where this object was, its size, its density, its orbit, and a pretty good idea of when it would be entering our inner solar system, which, of course, is right now, coming up from the south. Did you have something to say? I'll cut you off.
No. I've been into this Planet X and Nibiru and Wormwood and stuff for a while, and
right.
I've heard
right.
this a lot. And of course, this is all possible, but you know, I just find it hard to believe with all the people out there in the internet and all like that. I've not seen, like, the pictures they've been released have been ridiculous from people. They've obviously
right.
been frauds. I just have a hard
right.
time accepting this as a fact, as opposed
right.
to a potential or a theory.
Yes, sir. Professor McCanny agrees with you about the photographs, and so do I. Getting to the Antarctic, the South Pole, to take photographs, you just can't book a flight on American Airlines and go down there. It's,
right,
it's
right,
all controlled. Right, it's all controlled by the world's governments. There's no Holiday Inns down there. I'm pretty confident they even have pretty good tight control over emails and cell phone calls and anything else coming out of there. It's just the nature. McMurdo Bay, for example, we've got 5,000 people there. What in the world are 5,000 people doing in the Antarctic? I mean, how many ice cores can you drill, and how much can you count penguins? I mean,
you know,
what in the world do 5,000 people do?
You know, I'll give you all that. All of that stuff is kind of, and we can keep going with all the odd kind of things there.
Right.
But to me, I guess it's odd, but to kind of sew them all together and make a factual statement, it's a little bit of a stretch for me. I mean, it's obvious
it's happened
in the past. It's obvious it's happened in the past, and it's been denied. And that denial is kind of suspect, that they're not denying it, you know, with Velikovsky and so on. So it's obvious things have
right.
happened.
Obviously. You know, being a devil's advocate makes for much better radio, by the way, and I appreciate that. One of the things I want to throw, and I do this on just about every guest appearance I do, I put out information that people can research themselves to find what we might call circumstantial evidence that very strange things are going on. And here they are. These are simple Google searches anybody can do. And what they'll find is critical parts, not all the government. If you work for Health and Human Services, you're not moving to Denver. But critical things, what they call continuity of government, offices are moving, and here's the searches: CIA in Denver, NSA as in no such agency, National Security Agency, NSA in Denver, NSA in Utah. They just announced this past fall, NSA, that they were building a new computer center 20 miles south of Salt Lake City in the desert. I've been 20 miles south of Salt Lake City in the desert. It really is the desert, not a fun place to live. And here's the reason they state publicly, James, that they're doing it. Quote, unquote, the electricity's cheaper.
No, and you know what? In fact, again, I have the advantage, some people in the audience maybe not, I have your DVD, and I accept all of that. But, for example, what they could be moving there for is they're getting ready for world power play. They could be getting ready.
Doesn't mean that
it's a Planet X or whatnot would be the reason. It could be simply they're getting ready for the New World Order to take over, and that's going to be in the mountains, nice and safe.
Well, they're doing it because they have no choice. But here's some other evidence that's not in my DVD. One of my contacts is in mid-level management with Lowe's, and he was and he knows about these things that we're talking about in great detail. He was at a meeting for mid-level management in the late spring of 09. Now, keep in mind, before I tell you what I'm about to tell you, that 75% of all the people in this country live within 100 miles of either the East Coast, the West Coast, or the Gulf Coast. What Lowe's told him at this meeting was, no new Lowe's. This is the nationwide building supply store. No new Lowe's was being built near the East Coast, West Coast, or Gulf Coast. Existing stores in those areas, which of course is the biggest part of their market demographics are getting no major upgrades, routine maintenance only. You're right, James. A lot of what we have here is what might be called circumstantial evidence. And they're getting ready for a power play. Yes, they are. They intend to come through these earth changes and rising ocean levels intact with their shiny new world order ready to go on the other side of it. And they're getting 5,000 feet above sea level in Denver because of it. You know, they went through the whole Cold War with the threat of nuclear holocaust and kept their same digs in the, on the East Coast and the West Coast and the Gulf Coast and so forth. This threat, they can't do that. This threat they can't deal with unless they move to high ground.
No, well, I'll grant you that. They were, you know, exposed to nuclear war. It probably started to dig. But, I mean, one of the things is what you say people should prepare for is great. And so it's like whether somebody does what you say for Planet X or for world domination, I mean, it's good stuff. So I don't...
Right. Right.
You know, I'm
right.
I guess I'm not questioning your suggestions. I guess I'm just kind of focusing on the evidence for a planet coming in at this time.
Well, here's some. Okay. Well, let's focus on that for just a couple of minutes here. Another DVD that I do offer at my website, put together. I'm sure I mentioned Zachariah Sitchin, and you'll know instantly who I'm talking about, author of The 12th Planet. Well, it's been more than 20 years ago. Sitchin interviewed the following individual, the supervising astronomer of the United States Naval Observatory, Dr. Robert Harrington, in his office at the United States Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C. 10 minutes with Dr. Harrington. Now, if you're going to draw a paycheck, James, for looking at stars, that's about the top of your career path, I believe. Dr. Harrington talks about the 10th planet, Nibiru, as a matter of scientific fact, not as a matter of scientific speculation, giving its size, 3 times size of the Earth, giving its density with a far larger iron-nickel core than Earth, giving its orbit, and he draws its orbit and he matches it up with Sitchin's orbit with the Babylonian clay tablets, by the way. And he just goes on and talks about it as a matter of scientific fact.
Well, either Sitchin is I don't know what the word to use. I don't want to say the word lying, but I mean Sitchin himself made like a little press conference and said, according to his earliest calculations, 2050 is when he's looking at Nibiru coming back, at his earliest, and that's, I guess, if you want to talk optimistically early, that's what he's talking about.
Sitchin's calculations are based on the Babylonian clay tablets. The information I have is based on what's coming out of NASA through private sources.
Well, I understand it. And I'm in a position to go, it's not that I'm saying you're lying, okay? That's not what I mean. But I don't believe anybody. I used to believe a lot of people until I was disillusioned. So, like, I'd like to see something that I can hold in my hands to show it, you know. And that's where I'm kind of missing.
Well, I understand that. Well, Dr. Harrington has the credentials that will stand up against.
Well, and that's true. I've heard of him, and I've never heard that he actually went to that degree in. In Louisiana. So that's something that's newer to me.
Maybe I need to get a copy of the DVD in the mail to you. Dr. Harrington has credentials that are impeccable and will stand up to any scrutiny.
Hmm.
The U.S. Navy veterans, and it's one of the tough things I had dealing with the veterans, is all the men that I was debriefing, they were in the folding chairs in the audience. They weren't the scientists giving the briefing. In fact, they weren't even scientists giving briefing. They were naval officers who were basically reading the script. So they were told what would happen, given a very general time frame, their own lifetimes, but not told why it would happen. They didn't have a need to know that. And in fact, the people doing the briefings didn't have a need to know, so they didn't. But they were just told what would happen in a general time frame. We're in that time frame right now. Now, you saw on my DVD the radar image of a hurricane over Oklahoma, which is not terribly close to any ocean that I'm aware of. We had a hurricane here. I'm hundreds of miles from the Gulf of Mexico. I'm in Missouri. In the Ozarks.
Right.
We had a hurricane here April the 8th, 2009. And even the local FM commercial radio station was calling it a Category 1 hurricane because
right.
it is.
And what you know, and I've had James McKinney on here many times, and I've talked with him about the electrical nature of the universe. And a hurricane on land is something that it's not common in that it's hard to store the electrical energy up in the air when it could lightning down to the earth. But it's possible. It doesn't mean, I mean, for example, in other words, if we have a lot of incoming electricity, that could cause a hurricane on land.
That's right.
But that incoming electricity, why that's happening, you know, it could be a bunch of the sun is where our electricity comes from.
Well, I mean, you're right. And the majority of our weather on Earth, people want to talk about HARP and all that, which HARP can affect weather for maybe a couple hundred square miles for a couple of days, but that's about all it can do. But you're right. The majority of our weather is a consequence of energy coming at us from our sun. That's absolutely correct.
And you know, if there was a body coming in, for example, I was impressed years ago when they showed a comet coming by. Well, actually, NASA didn't say nothing about it, and it actually turned off the cameras when it got too cool. But
right.
a comet came by, and it got to a certain point, and then there was a bolt came out from the sun that hit the comet, and it was pretty spectacular.
And, I've seen those photos. You're
and so
right.
you can have an incoming body would disrupt the electrical nature. So, I mean, I'm game for that. It's just I would think there'd be something we can look at. Now, I understand NASA's controlling the satellites. I understand all of that. And
Absolutely.
I guess what I'm thinking is that somebody out there, I mean, they have, you know, everything, the most despicable child porn and everything you could think of gets out on the internet, and they can't find out where it comes from. Somebody would have something.
Well, at some point, people will be able to see it in the southern hemisphere first, and then once it's above the equator and we can see it here, I think we're going to have more important things to do.
Yeah, well, no, and that's why I think the pertinent thing here is, regardless of it, whether it be a wormwood or whether it be world instability, what you are saying for people to do, the methods and all that, you know, are highly... I'm in the process of doing it, though I don't know if I can I can pull it off going from where I was to where I need to be, quote, in time, whether it be Planet X or...
We've got a lot of issues. You're right, James. We have a lot of issues and concerns here. We have the economy, which is collapsing around our ears, which could... That by itself could lead to a social disruption. Possibly World War III, basically any day with what's going on between Israel and Iran. The swine flu could come back as a genuine bona fide biological weapon later this year, sometime in the springtime, as opposed to being a big so what, which it's been so far. So yes, preparedness is basically my mantra. And being prepared for Earth changes is one of several major issues that are real and pretty much in our face.
Yeah, because I mean, when Scallion's being used, I mean, he's got a lot of problems and stuff he says. But then again, people are human, and that does not. I wouldn't listen to say Scallion and say, "Well, you've got these issues here, so I'm going to rule out all your data." No, I wouldn't do that. I take all information from everybody. Knowing we all have problems. We all have our good and bad days. We all have our
right.
And I just kind of keep it and put it together.
It's kind of my funny you should mention Scallion. When I first started trying to figure out this map from the Navy, I had to have a starting point. I used Scallion's map as a starting point when I was working with the Navy veterans. And basically what they told me was Scallion's map from the Rocky Mountains east was fairly accurate, except for Wisconsin
right.
being mostly underwater. But Scallion's map from the Rocky Mountains west wasn't even close. Scallion showed massive, tens of thousands of square miles underwater that the Navy didn't.
You know, and if his map is off, I would still give him credit, because when you deal with psychic stuff, it's not like, you know, counting pennies on a table.
It's not precision. No, it's not precision. And a psychic himself would be the first person to tell you that.
You know, in fact, I was going to write this down, and I didn't. I didn't have time. I was getting my taxes done this week, and it took me all weekend.
Oh, boy.
You mentioned about the oceanologist, the PhD oceanologist, all agreeing about the water slowing. I actually went out and found one a few years back in England. I had him on the air live. He wrote a study that the water The water sinks up at the top and then crawls along the bottom, which is why you get that conveyor belt type thing. And he did say that the water was slowing down in its sinking process. They got these huge chimneys, as he calls them, that are, I want to say like a, hold on one second. That are like a square mile or so. They are slowing down. But what he did say was that he estimated that the cooling of Europe would take about a degree after 100 years. Well, and that's a PhD oceanologist who wrote the study, who was up there for a long time. So I wonder if it's not being slightly exaggerated.
Well, the oceanographers do not agree on when the Gulf Stream will stop. They are in agreement that it's in the process of slowing down and stopping. There's no agreement that I'm aware of that exactly when it will stop. Now, about 5 years ago, I think it was around December 04, which it sounds like about the time you were interviewing this gentleman, they did publicly announce that the Gulf Stream, which is also called the North Atlantic Thermal Helium Conveyor, had lost about half of its mass and velocity. One of the problems in doing, they do computer models, of course. One of the problems they have is they don't know exactly what percentage salt content, when it gets down to a certain percentage of losing salt content, at what point it will shut down. That's kind of a bit of guesswork.
And he was saying that this is all guesswork at this point.
Right.
And he was surprised to see it even slowing and so forth and so on. So, I mean, I understand this is
But the conveyor, the Gulf Stream, I mentioned this in my DVD, if you look at a map of the world, England, Ireland, Scotland are as close to the North Pole as Moscow is.
Oh, yeah?
Which is pretty... Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
If it wasn't for that water coming up there, it would be bad, bad winters.
Well, typically in merry old England, a heavy sweater will get you through the winter.
Yeah, those days are, those days are...
Well, look at the winter that we're wrapping up over there. There's probably precedence for the amount of snow that they've had, but the entire man-made infrastructure there is not meant to deal with the winters of Moscow. They don't bury the pipes deep enough, James. They don't have enough insulation in their homes. The furnaces aren't tough enough. Nothing they've built there is meant to withstand that kind of winter.
Well, we have to take a break here and come back. We're talking with John Moore. We are talking about, his DVD, which is available from his website, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, but there is a bunch of other stuff there. He's quite busy with putting out the videos and survival and whatnot, which, I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater here. There may be some differences here and there, but it doesn't take a genius to look out into the world and realize that if they, quote-unquote, turn off the electricity tomorrow, we would be in a mess. And so, hold on. We'll continue to talk with him and take your questions live right after these messages.
Make sure you stay tuned, because you're listening to Feet to the Fire.
You can contact James live on the air several different ways. You can call by phone, toll-free in the United States and Canada at 888-863-2722. If you have internet access, point your browser to www.feettofire.com. That's www.feet2fire.com. And check the left of the screen for the How to Participate text and click. You can then choose Direct Chat with James or join the official group chat room. You can send email to James at f2f@ipsmediaworks.net. There is a video chat room to see James in action, as well as other F2F listeners. www.ivisit.com has the free software to download and access the Feet to Fire video chat room. And now, live from Chicago, here is the Black Knight of Talk Radio, James Arthur Yancic.
All right, we're talking Nibiru, Wormwood, Planet X, all the same. It is not pleasant. And it may be coming to a planet near you. It's got to be as near. It doesn't have to hit. It's just near as bad. And we are talking live with John Moore. Welcome back to the show, John. We do have a phone call. If I could take this before we get going.
Let me hit the button.
You're live on the air with John Moore. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Don. I've sort of become John's research associate. I've come upon a piece of circumstantial evidence myself that would indicate NASA, our public, never a straight agency space program, may be getting ready themselves by relocating their own people. I come upon a contract that was awarded to NASA back in late 2007 that gave their people 2 years to start relocating their own people. And as you know, most of the NASA facilities are near the coastline. And I'm in the process of doing a FOIA request to learn more about what this contract all entails. But it was awarded to Prudential, an outside vendor named Prudential Relocation Services. And I also wanted to throw this in, Jim, that seed vault in Norway, the Doomsday Seed Vault, well, it only they had that thing built in 8 months. That's kind of quick.
Did you get all that?
I got all that, yeah. Okay, yeah. That's Sheldon. He is my research associate. The seed vault, a seed is in garden seed, tomato seed, up in, it's actually an island that belongs to Norway at the edge of the Arctic Circle. Building something that size, steel reinforced concrete, in 8 months is phenomenal. It was completed the summer of 08. It's pretty mainstream news. Bill Gates was involved in the funding, by the way. But once again, James, they wouldn't do that 40 years before it was needed. They would do it within a couple of years before it was needed. Infrastructure like that is not built two generations before it's needed. It's built basically at the time it's needed, which of course is right now.
Well, I'm glad that they built it in Norway. Otherwise, we'd have Monsanto One Life, 1 year seeds filling it, which wouldn't do a whole lot of good.
The whole genetically modified seed thing it's horrendous. These Frankenstein seeds, and I didn't understand it at first, but I've come to understand the true significance of genetically modified seeds, and they're horrendous. They're absolutely horrendous.
Actually, you know, you wrote an email, Sheldon. A question I was going to get around to asking, and while you're here is, how do we don't know that this isn't, since we're getting this information from the military, who had never lies to us and never has a alternative motive, how do we know that this isn't some kind of a black ops deal to get people to be afraid or whatever while they implement some other plan?
Which part? The NASA moving their employees?
No, I mean any of it. I mean, you know, the whole...
Well, can I interject, Jim?
Yeah, sure.
My $64 million question is this. Since Planet X would, it's called action at a distance. It doesn't have to hit Earth to,
right.
You know, and, well, then the military, they could be carrying out their black ops military weather warfare technology instead as a cover for Planet X coming in. You know, I just like to be open-minded. I don't say John's a liar, but this is my big question.
Yeah, and Planet X could be the cover for the military experience. I mean, you know, that's what I mean. It makes you wonder which one is the real deal here. They're both not pleasant.
Right. Well, the NASA did admit in public in press releases in the early 80s, around 82, 83, that the 10th planet had been found.
I guess he hung up.
More recently, about 3 years ago, they claimed to have discovered another 10th planet. They even gave it a name, Xena. And then it's like it never happened, James. It's kind of funny. Discovering a new planet and naming it, it was on the cover of Parade magazine, the Sunday
Right, and then there was magazine. Sedna is another one that was out there, too.
Right. And so, pretty big deals, but then it's just they just go away. They fade to the background.
Another oddity is you have the Vatican having a observatory that's looking kind of out down that way.
Well, they actually have several observatories, and what's it got to do with charity and saving souls?
Yeah, you know? Well, of course, what is most of what any kind of organized religion do with that? It's all about power and control, but,
well, you know. It's, and, well, even still, what... If it's about power and control, what do professional grade observatories have to do with any of that? They have those because they, you know, the Vatican is a government. It's a country. And any country with the wherewithal is going to do these things. Now, the Vatican has an advantage over most countries. The Vatican Vaults is the largest collection of ancient manuscripts on the planet that we're aware of. And the scholars, the Vatican scholars, have known for many, many centuries that these events would be happening because they had the documents, they could read them, and they're certainly very well aware of them. They probably took over, and there's some evidence for this. We've all heard about the ancient library at Alexandria, Egypt, that was burned to heat the Roman baths for 6 months. Well, that's partly true. What we believe happened is the Roman legions took all the important documents on science, engineering, medicine, and technology, took them back to Rome, and what they burned basically were old tax records that had been accumulating for centuries to heat the Roman baths. But the good stuff went back to Rome, and when the Roman government was falling apart, the Vatican took control of it from the collapsing Roman government, and they've kept them ever since.
Oh, go ahead. It was the chat room resetting.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yes, the Vatican does have professional-grade observatories staffed with professional astronomers, and they're looking south, just like the American government's looking south with the new South Pole Telescope. And, of course, they have all these other technologies up in space, space-based technologies, to observe the 10th planet and everything else they want to look at.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is pretty weird to have all these people down there. I mean, it's ice. It's been around for thousands of years, so they say. I have a personal kind of, I don't know, what it's not a theory, really. It's kind of a, I don't know, fantasy or whatever, that actually Antarctica is Atlantis, and that when the Earth pole shifted, it used to be in a warmer climate, and was thus in the middle was Atlantis. And then when the Earth shifted, it got, you know, cold, and it's really the items and stuff like that are buried underneath all the ice, and they found
well,
it.
A lot of the real objective purpose for archaeology, in my opinion, is to recover ancient technology. And what's under Atlantis, almost without a doubt, includes evidence of human civilization. You're probably aware of that Christopher Columbus had charts showing the Antarctic continent without ice. And it's only been about 60 years ago that we've been able to verify the accuracy of his charts. In fact, his charts were used to make slight corrections in the U.S. Navy's charts. They were so accurate in some points. Now, those charts were made one of two ways. Either the Antarctic had no ice, or they had, whoever made them had the same technology we've got to see through the ice and tell where the ice stopped and the ocean, where the land stopped and the ocean began. Which we've only had that technology since World War II, the ability to look through the ice and make that determination.
Right. So, you got about, I don't know, maybe about 7 minutes or so, or maybe 9 minutes. You want to?
Well, I people should not make major decisions based on a radio talk show host and what they say or a guest. You need to do your own research and do your own homework. That my DVD does provide the information you need to find original source material, the government press releases, and books related to all this. I do have a toll-free number, by the way, James, 24/7, to get the DVD. It's 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. My website is thelibertyman.com. I'm on radio 6 days a week on 3 different networks. So I'm real busy putting out information about the 10th planet and preparedness in general, which is really my passion, is preparedness, to help people be safe from whatever's coming at them, whether it's economic collapse, World War III, a flu pandemic, whatever it might be. These oceans, of course, are part of it.
Right, and in being prepared, I mean, that's something, if I can go back in time, I mean, we all wish we could do things differently, and if I could pick one thing I would have done differently, I would have geared my life toward preparedness, independence. because
well, it's not too late. It's not
no, it isn't. It isn't, and I'm working on it. But it's a question of time versus the ability of what I have to work with to convert it.
Well, time and money. You get yourself a good quality gravity feed water filter. You can buy bulk grains from your local feed store for $10-$15 for 50 pounds. You know, freeze dried food's fairly expensive, but corn, wheat, millet, spelt, oats. You know, $10-$15 for 50 pounds. You literally get a ton of grain for a couple hundred bucks, literally. Get your medical supplies. Get your skills. You need to be able to intercept the
emergency radio frequency. Yeah, and you mentioned on your DVD, you mentioned about getting EMT training, and I'm going to look into that.
Right.
You know, these are all very good suggestions, and that's why I don't want to, throw the baby out with the bathwater, because one way or another, we're going to need these things.
Absolutely. Your local Red Cross, fire departments, they all give emergency medical training. Your local junior college, your ham radio clubs, go to your local Radio Shack, talk to the manager of the Radio Shack. He can refer you to the ham radio clubs. If you're sitting there in the dark wondering what's going on because you can't intercept the emergency radio frequencies, it will make you crazy. I mean, I've been through that. I lived through the Tet Offensive in Vietnam. And if you don't know what's going on, it's human nature for your mind to go to the worst possible scenario and believe that the worst is coming, which may or may not be the case. So you need to be able to intercept those emergency communications.
I also like when you mentioned about having a group of six people all specialized or in various areas, because one person just can't do it all.
That's right. You need people with medical skills, carpenter skills, plumbing skills, somebody who can grow a garden and take care of small animals, chickens, rabbits, and all that kind of stuff, goats. Lots of skills. And if you're on a crisis, you need somebody to be awake all night, every night. And that's no small thing, having one adult awake all night, every night. And if you got at least six people, preferably eight or ten, you can break up that night watch and not be sleep deprived.
And if you can group up with these people of like-mindedness before any events, it'd be a hell of a lot easier than trying to bump into people and hooking up after.
Right. You need people you can trust without question. There has to be absolute trust and with each other, that you will cover each other's backs. And doing that before the fact is the desirable thing. Trying to put together a team like that after the fact would not be easy and may be quite dangerous.
Yeah, because how do you know that guy who wants to be your friend and help is really scoping you out to take your stuff?
Right, right. Well, being related by blood and marriage is a big help. And having people you've worked with or, you know, people you went to school with, very close people that you know who they are and what they're all about and have known that for many years. That's who you want in your group.
All right, because, you know, you want to have this all. And when things do happen, even if it's a massive power outage for extended areas, I mean, you're going to be in a position not only to survive, but you might be in a position to actually help some of your neighbors that you know are okay, but maybe haven't planned.
The neighbors need to look out for each other. I've been investigating crimes for 37 years. I've asked career criminals the following question: what would you do during a major crisis like an earthquake or a tornado? And they look me straight in the eye and say, John, we look at it as economic opportunity.
Yeah, I would imagine.
They don't hesitate.
Well,
that's how they look.
You look at what a lot of stuff that went happen down in New Orleans. You know,
that's right.
You've had tales of heroism, but you also had plenty of ne'er-do-wells using it as an opportunity.
L.A. riots, same way. Those electronic stores and gun stores were hit with military precision during the L.A. riots and cleaned out in a matter of minutes.
You know, that's another thing. The whole argument is people could be listening to this who are that ilk, and they are planning for when it happens. They're going to have a plan set up, It won't be a good one. You know, so they
it'd be good for them, but not for us.
I mean, what I mean is they may have a plan of action for when this happens.
That's what happened during the L.A. riots. What happened there was done with military precision. Hit those liquor stores, electronic stores, gun stores, and clean them out in a matter of minutes.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you can count it. It'll happen again. And I don't know about details in New Orleans for that happening, but very likely it happened somewhat.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of, as you're looking at all this stuff, and again, I've been following this for several years, all of a sudden we're having these mega earthquakes here over...
Well, that's another effect of the 10th planet, is it will cause earthquakes. Action at a distance, according to Professor McCann.
Yeah, right.
It's never hit it.
And in... one oddity in all this is the acquiescence of the sun. You would think that it would be all agitated.
It will be at some point. It's in a real dormant stage, which it's coming out of, by the way. It's coming out of its dormancy. But it will be quite active as well.
And then it's interesting, you have movies like 2012, even though the science behind it was ridiculous, they could have done a lot better as far as coming up with real things. And then the movie called The Knowing, which I found interesting, the ending of that movie.
That's one I haven't seen. I saw 2012 at the theater, but I'm going to make a note of The Knowing. And
I mean, the theology in that movie or the paranormalness is interesting, but it was the actual physical ending. And then having people on my show like Phil LaViolette talking about the incoming explosion from the center of the galaxy, which is not related to Planet X or to world politics, but yet it could be as deadly. That's what I mean, is regardless of what hits you.
I don't know about the explosion from the middle of the galaxy, but a coronal mass ejection is certainly high on the list of things that's very likely to happen.
Right. I mean, again...
That would come from the sun, sun.
Right. And it could be perpetuated, it could be catalyzed by this incoming energy or Planet X or whatever.
Well... Absolutely. The 10th planet is a cause of many things that will be happening. It'll affect the sun, which will affect us and impact us directly with electrical energy and gravity. It has a quarter million mile wide debris field, by the way, James, also.
All right, it doesn't have to get close. It doesn't have to. You know,
we'll take it from rocks.
A movie I recommend was, I've been a sci-fi movie since I was a kid, and there's a movie that came out in 1951 called When Worlds Collide, and it is the first Planet X type movie that came out, and it's really funny how the people behaved in that. Granted, it's, you know, the culture, it's 1951 as opposed to now, but the principles are still the same.
James, I'm being summoned by my next radio show, unfortunately.
Okay, we're about at the end, and people can get to your website to get any information.
LibertyMan.com.
Alrighty.
I appreciate the time, sir. We'll do this again soon, I hope.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, James.
Yeah, so if you check out that movie, I actually bought it and watched it, and it's really good. It was big blockbuster back then. In fact, I think the movie 2012 was kind of a remake of that that aspect. Yeah, in the chat room, somebody mentioned a zombie apocalypse. You know, there's a lot of movies coming up where you have zombies and werewolves and whatnot. You know, the public consciousness might be flowing here, that things that, you know, I don't, you know, I know, I'm not one saying here to sit back, everything's going to be fine. I'm just saying that I think one shouldn't simply prepare to go through for life. I think if one realizes that we're all going to die, but the quality of life and living in love and helping is the most important thing. Surviving at all costs to stay alive would not be the answer. It'd be surviving with quality and with love. And that's why I think whether it be electrical outage for a week or, you know, meteor or Planet X, we all should have this outlook on living the quality of life that's preparing and being for the inconveniences or disaster, but also doing that with a certain kind of je ne crois rather than panic. Anyway, we'll be back to continue these kind of talks with Marshall Masters, who has things to say about this as well. After the top of the hour, see you in 4 minutes.